Blog Talk Radio.
All right. Hoping everybody have a good day. Yes, today we're talking about picking and choosing. I like that. Go on. What's going on with that? Okay, it's on. Maybe I have. I see what happened. Okay. Okay. Let's do this. Let's do a direct call. Well, man, this is what we're talking about. All right. Picking and choosing to charge a DA when convenient. Okay. Some Georgia DA has been recently charged as far as not only Jackie Johnson, we'll get into that in a minute, but another district attorney has been indicted. His name is Mark Jones of Muskogee, I think it is. He was trying to bribe some officers for $1,000. We'll get to that in a minute. But first, I wanted to congratulate Dr. Umar Johnson. Dr. Johnson did his festival at his school there in Wilmington, Delaware. And Dr. Johnson married two queens. Remember, Dr. Johnson said that he does not only just want one wife, he wants two. And I have no problem with that. You know, same thing with Brother Polite, but he's still going through his issue here. here's the thing. When you're picking and choosing to charge a district attorney or any politician for misconduct, that is suspect, okay? Because a lot of times white people will get charged if you see the fact that they basically is prosecuting or they are disciplining other white people. Now, I'm not going to go into if the Duke lacrosse players actually did what they said they've done. They were basically found not guilty. Okay. But Mike Nifon understood he was off code. Mike Nifon understood that, hey, you don't go and prosecute three white people or three white boys or men and thinking then that there's not going to be a discipline behind it. You can only do that to niggers. Understand? So he learned a lesson of being off code when it came to his prosecutorial procedures in his office. Because under the global system of white supremacy, you're only supposed to make sure that these Negroes are to be put in their place. And you have to then get permission. And Mike Nifon understood that when he was charged and indicted, he understood that it's not going to let me in. But he understood that, hey, you know, now I understand that I broke the code. Now I understood. At first I didn't understand, but now I understand. And you can talk about, oh, well, it was community pressure and stuff like that and blah, blah, blah. But at the end of the day, it was about throwing in our face that you just don't prosecute a white person unless we give you permission. And we're going to have white people who are going to be what we call sacrifices, that will show you what discipline you will get if you break that code. That what brings us to District Attorney Jackie Johnson, ex-Brunswick DA indicted for misconduct in Ahmaud Arbery case surrenders. Now, a lot of people will say, well, yes, see, the system is finally turning around. The system is finally doing something here. Let's read that article, and then let me give my analysis, because I love to give my analysis. Thumbs up, like, share, and subscribe. The news reporting here says, News 4 Jax. Ex-Brunswick DA indicted for misconduct in Ahmaud Arbery case surrenders. Now, we do our commentaries basically with fair use. You know, the people who run YouTube, they know that this is what we use it for, okay? It's to just basically give our own analysis for the black grassroots, you know, to tell the stories here. Anyway, it says that Jackie Johnson, who was the district attorney for Brunswick Judicial Circuit for 10 years, turned herself in at the Glenn County Sheriff's Office early Wednesday morning. Bond was set at $10,000, but she released on her own recognizance, meaning she did not have to pay a cash bond. Johnson, 49, who was strongly criticized over the way she handled the Ahmaud Arbery case, was indicted last week by the Glenn County Grand Jury on charges of violating of oath of public officer and obstruction of police officer. The charges are related to the investigation surrounding the deadly shooting of Ahmaud Arbery. Specifically, the indictment in full at the end of the article accused Johnson in February 2020 of violating her oath as district attorney by showing favor and affection to Greg McMichael during the investigation. Greg McMichael had once worked as an investigator in Johnson's office. Johnson also failed to treat Ahmaud Arbery and his family fairly with dignity, the indictment states. It alleges that after Ahmaud's death, Johnson sought the assistance of Wayne Cross Judicial Circuit District Attorney George Barnhill, and after disqualifying her for office, recommended Barnhill to the Attorney General's office for appointment as the case prosecutor without disclosing that she has previously sought Barnhill's assistance on a case. The indictment also alleges Johnson knowingly and willfully directed officers to not arrest Greg McMichael, adult son Travis McMichael. Attorney General Chris Carr announced the indictment on Thursday after requesting that the Georgia Bureau of Investigation launch an investigation in May of 2020. A judge signed the warrant for Johnson's arrest on Thursday, the same day, and the indictment was handed down. What I think is important about the case is accountability. I think the Attorney General in Georgia felt that it was very important, as to do many people in the community, that she be held accountable, whether she be convicted or not. That separation question, says Brunswick criminal defense lawyer Paige Pate, who is not affiliated with the case. Their charges are not clear-cut. It's kind of a stretch to say simply because of the way she handled the situation, she committed a felony offense. That's going to go be uphill climb for the Attorney General. But regardless of the outcome, bringing the indictment here in Glenn County sends a strong message about accountability. Pate said that these criminal charges against her related directly to what she did in the Arby's case and do not seem to impact any other case she had while she was a district attorney. But if there is evidence that Johnson showed favoritism or improperly influenced the actions of the police, attorneys could seek to reopen those cases upon request. Now, as you know, this article was written, September 8th, 2021. Now, as they are talking about this, saying that there's no other situations of misconduct, you know that they're trying to basically get us or set us up to say this is the only reason why they're investigating Mrs. Johnson. That's not true. We will later learn that Jackie Johnson had covered up another case involving a white female. Okay? So when somebody say, well, this is the only case that she's been indicted for, no. They're really going after her because she basically allowed the cover-up, as they say, in a white girl's case, and they were like, there's nothing had been done. So we'll talk about that if we have enough time about the, hopefully it's in the article, I forget her name, but there was another Caucasian female that was shot and killed, and the police, they were just shooting randomly in her on her car in her window and killed her. And I forget her name, but we were reading that not too long ago, and Jackie Johnson covered that case up, okay? So if anybody can say, oh, well, they're doing this just because of Ahmaud Arbery, no. And as you know, Ahmaud Arbery's family hired, you know, Mushmouth Ben Crump, and what's his name? Lee Merritt. They're on the scene again. Mm-hmm. Every time there's a high-profile case, you know those two shows up. Okay? And these families need to just get, you know, just say, no, Lee Merritt and Ben Crump, I don't need y'all here. Y'all just here for the cameras. But anyway, it goes on to say that News4Jax has reached out to the Attorney General office to find out when Johnson will be in court next. Generally, in a state case in Georgia, after the arrest occurs, there's a period of time before the person is called back into court to enter a formal plea, Pate said. He said that motions could be filed, potentially hearings, and then a trial in the case is not resolved. Now, notice that her attorney is going to try to motion to get the case thrown out, saying that a prosecutor cannot be charged, it can only be disbarred, which they're going to, is what is going to happen here, possibly. Unless they can find what they did again in the Duke LaCrosse case, which is what they describe as mitigating factors. But anyway, as you rarely find it when the victim is black, though. Let's go to if convicted, the violation of oath of public officer is a felony charge. Okay, that's the charge. The conviction, the violation of oath of a public officer is a felony charge that carries a sentence of 1 to 5 years. The obstruction and hindering a law enforcement officer charge is a misdemeanor that carries up to 12 months, okay? Greg and Travis McMichael armed themselves and pursued Arbery 25 in a pickup truck in February 23rd, 2020, after they spotted Arbery running in their neighborhood just outside the coastal city of Brunswick. The neighbor William Roddy Bryant Jr. joined the chase and took the cell phone video showing Travis McMichael shooting Arbery with a shotgun. Greg McMichael told police they suspected Arbery was a burglar and that Travis McMichael shot him in self-defense. Prosecutors have said Arbery was unarmed and was carrying no stolen items when he was killed. The McMichaels and Bryant weren't charged in the killing until more than 2 months later after the video was linked online and the GBI took over the case. All three men are scheduled to stand trial this fall on murder charges. Jury selection is set to begin on October the 18th. And, of course, they show Jackie Johnson's indictment against her from the clerk's. Hold on, they got Christopher M. Carr, which is the Georgia State Attorney General. This indictment, though, is important because it shows, I don't know why Chris Carr is doing this, and he has not went after these clowns on mugshot.com for what they're doing, destroying people's lives. Remember, they had,
you know, they had my mugshot on there, and I'm like, dude, my case was dismissed. So I don't know why y'all doing this. Let me go. See, here's the thing. When a DA chooses to charge a public official in these cases, man, why is my they basically know that that a lot of DAs can be charged with what he is charging her now with. I'm telling you, they will find something if they want to charge you. So by her being charged with this, it will probably set a precedent to see if this goes through. Now, because I think I read, let me go back and see, that a grand jury had indicted her as well. Okay, and if that's the truth, then if convicted, like when it went back to the article, it says, if convicted, the violation of oath of public officer is a felony charge that carries a sentence of 1 to 5 years. The obstruction and hindering a law enforcement officer charge is a misdemeanor that carries up to 12 months. Okay. Now, we have a lot of district attorneys, the one like David McDade, remember the Janarla Wilson's case? I was a part of an activist of that case. That district attorney should have been charged. The district attorney in Breonna Taylor's case should have been charged. Understand? And they all can be charged with this violation of oath of public office. You see, this thing right here, they were hiding this law from the public for a very long time. A district attorney is an elected official, which means that they try to claim that he can only be our judge or whatever, can only be charged for certain types of crimes that they commit, but they have immunity for certain things as well. And which, okay, but what about the violation of oath of public officer, which is a felony charge? Why can a lot of DAs be charged with that? In which basically it destroys their immunity process, a qualified immunity that police officers and lawmakers get, or whoever, our judges get, I'm sorry, judges and police officers get. And it make it then that everybody basically is not above the law. Right now, judges and federal judges district attorneys mostly can be just disbarred, and unless they do some criminal action and you can prove it. And then but when they go and violate the rights of individual people, you know, you can't find any way of anywhere where these fools have been, brought on to charges. Until Chris Carr said, okay, well, I'm going to use the violation of oath of office against you. And they're like, wait a minute, man. You're doing something that you're not supposed to do. But the reason why I bring that up is because a Caucasian family was pretty much waiting for the same type of justice when she was shot in her car by police officers that they covered up. And Jackie Johnson, she was a part of that case. You know, she was doing the same thing. She was covering up evidence as well. You know. So, like I said, when they say that, oh, we're doing this only for Ahmaud Arbery's case? No. You have to look deeper into other cases until which this woman tried to cover up. Ahmaud Arbery's case is just the one that really got the press, okay? But now she's been indicted again on charges with the with the Caucasian female, if I can find the case. Hold on. Thumbs up, like, share, and subscribe. Man, what's going on? Every time I come on live, the internet wants to mess up because, you know, I think that they do this. You know, I mean, Tariq, he was talking about how his internet has been messing up. And then they always want to say, well, we don't see – they told me last time that there was an outage in the neighborhood, which is a lie. Every time we come on live here in the black media, they like to mess with our internet. You see, here's the thing. They can't stop the new voices of black media. So what they have to do is they have to do a lot of crazy stuff to us. They have to come into our live feed. They have to say that we violate their community standards. They have to contact the cable companies to get our IP numbers so they can interfere with our internet servers. These people they don't stop, man, because they know that nobody is listening to the mainstream white media, okay? And so now since you're not listening to them, they figured, oh, since you're not listening to me, then what I'm going to say is, well, we're going to interrupt what y'all are listening to. And that's those fools over there at the New Voices of Black Media, okay? But a woman, I'm going to try to find out, and then I'll come back to her case. And we'll go over that, or what this means there, though, when I can bring the internet back up here. But it won't let me do my live here. Well, these people don't quit. Now, let's go back to Mike Nifon and the Duke Lacrosse people. When we talk there about picking and choosing to charge a DA when there's misconduct, look at all of the shootings and killings that the police do on black folks and the district attorney. They're covering up evidence like they did in Mike Brown's case. They basically refuse to prosecute, which is, in my opinion, if a grand jury, if you leave it up to a grand jury, most likely a grand jury will indict. But sometimes the prosecutor will go on their own and say, I'm not going to indict this case. That's them being on cold, picking and choosing to indict. See, the officers in Breonna Taylor's case, they picked and choose not to indict all of them, okay? But in the Duke Lacrosse case, they were showing Mike Nifon, or however you say his name, as a white person. You're off code, man. And how dare you charge these three white guys that is going to be running this country or running some Fortune 500 company in this country in the future? How dare you try to give them a felony? Understand? How dare you do that? In fact, to make sure that you don't try to do this again, while we can't prosecute you for a crime, we have what they call mitigating factors that you basically broke the rule of law when you knew that there was supposedly lies. These guys did get out of control at this part. You understand? And what got them, though, is that the girl admitted that she agreed to be the stripper, and they did a lot of stuff. She was paid for it, which means that if you're doing that, of course, they're going to look at you like you're a slut. Okay? But the disciplinary board disbarred Nifon back in 2007, I think it was, because he was off code. Okay? And Nellie Fuller talks about you've been off code, white people being sacrifices. He talks about that.
and his trial with the Ethics Committee in, I think it's North Carolina, Durham, North Carolina. Basically, the issue there is that you need to get back on code, because in the prosecution office, we only destroy the lives of black folks. You understand? We make it to where they don't get no opportunity. Now, you might say, well, no, that's not true, because the district attorney in Ahmaud Arbery's case, well, she got indicted. Is she a white sacrifice? Well, they said, well, we can go after her too. You know why? Because she basically tried to cover up the police involvement, like I said earlier, where there was, when they shot into this lady's home, her car. Okay. Shot into her car. And when they shot into her car, Jackie Johnson again covered that up. Okay. I think that she was part of that case. And okay, I pull up the story. Like, share, and subscribe, family. Yeah. Like, share, and subscribe. Let's read this. It says that the prosecutors who watched the fatal police shooting video of Caroline Small had more than a century of courtroom experience for murder cases, to child molestation, to rape. Still, the violence that unfolded on the computer screen shot them into silence. The video shows eight police bullets piercing the car windshield of an unarmed Georgia mother as she was pinned against a utility pole and surrounded by police cars. The consensus in the courthouse conference room was the two Glenn County police officers who pulled their trigger has committed a crime. One DA called for more investigation. A second said it was manslaughter. Another said it was aggravated assault. Okay. So that was Caroline Small. So when the white media says she's only going to be charged for the Ahmaud Arbery's case, and there's not any other cases that we don't think that she basically was involved in. So that's what why we're doing it. You better take a look at Caroline Small. I think it was her father, not too long ago, was on television talking about her daughter's case after Ahmaud Arbery's case. It goes in and says, at high noon on June 18, 2010, Caroline Small, a petite 35-year-old woman and mother of two, sat behind the wheel of her beat-up Buick Century with nowhere to turn. Police vehicles flanked her on two sides. A shallow ditch was on another, and a utility pole blocked her rear bumper. Unarmed but distraught, Small crime to that point has been reckless driving and leading police on a erratic low-speed chase that ended when her car tires flattened to the rims, spun out of the suburban street. Sirens blared and officers shouted as she put the car into reverse, then drive, and then reverse. Two officers stood ground near their cars, guns drawn. If she moves the car, I'm going to shoot her, an officer yelled. Small pulled up forward, eight bullets tore through the windshield, striking her in the head and the face. The shooting was captured on police dash cam video. So was what the two Glenn County officers said afterwards. They compared their marksmanship. One told the witness how he saw Small's head exploded.
Their words were a calculus as small as death unnecessary. This is the worst one I've ever investigated, said Mike McDaniel, a retired Georgia Bureau of an agent who supervised in 2010 criminal investigations into the officer's action. I don't think it's a good shoot. I don't think it's a good shoot. That was the picture of the Caucasian female, Caroline Small. Now, like I said, Smalls death has also haunted Brian Bennett, who is a member of the grand jury that considered the officers fate voted to clear them of wrongdoing. Bennett now regrets that choice. I felt like I let that lady down, he said. I felt like they killed that lady. They didn't give her a chance. The grand jury Bennett served on found two Glenn County officers who fired a shot, Sergeant Robert C. Saxer and Officer Michael T. Simpson, were justified in pulling a trigger. A federal judge last September threw out the Small family wrongful death lawsuit, saying that the two officers killed lawfully because they thought Small posed a threat. Neither officer was ever disciplined. What happened in Small's case demonstrated the broad powers police in Georgia have to shoot and kill unarmed citizens to influence the outcome of their cases in the legal process. An Atlanta Journal-Constitution Channel 2 Action News investigation of the case found that Glenn County police officers interfered with the GBI's investigation from the start, seeking to protect the officers. Let's say that again. Glenn County police officers interfere with the GBI's investigation from the start. In other words, they obstructed justice. You understand? And the officers from the Glenn County police, they were never ever charged for obstructing justice, not only by the state police. They were not charged for obstructing justice by the federal government, which they should have did, the FBI, which should have got into the case too. The department tampered with the crime scene and created misleading evidence that shown to the grand jury. You understand? Same thing that they did in Taraja Benjamin's case. Tampered with evidence, obstructed justice, creating and misleading fraudulent information, falsifying documents, and all of this. The local district attorney shared the state's evidence with the officers nearly 2 months before the grand jury convened and cut an unusual deal with them just before it met. Okay? The local district attorney cut a deal. Amidst a national debate over police body cameras, Small case also highlights how limited video can be when matched against the wide latitude afforded police and the public predisposition to believe officers when they say their lives are in danger, no matter the circumstances. Okay? The officer's defense was simply they believe Small was using a car as a weapon and intended to run them over. They feared for their lives and the public safety. The argument rested on the implausible notion that Small, resting on her rims, have enough room to drive through a narrow gap and run them down. 5 years later, Sasser and Simpson are both certified officers in Georgia with the police powers intact. Neither would be interviewed for this story. The case is one of the least 150 fatal police shootings in Georgia since 2010. Identified by an AJC Channel 2 investigation. Small, who died a week after the shooting, never regained consciousness to tell her side of what happened. She had struggled for years with drug and alcohol addiction as well as mental health problems. Her divorce had finalized just days before the shooting. Her ex-husband, Keith Small, said he loved his wife and remembered her as a caring mother to their daughters, Annalise, who was 3 when her mother was killed, an older daughter from previous relationships. His wife had relapsed in the months leading up to the shooting and been diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder and dissociative disorder. He believes her mental health issues played into her actions the day of the chase. She needed the help. She needed help from the police, he said, not to be shot. Justice, he said, was not served. Smalls had never spoken about the case before, but if he's speaking out now, in part, he helped clear his wife's name. After the shooting, he said the public discussion about her drifted to her troubled history with addiction and distracted from the officer's actions. She wasn't just a junkie, Small said. She was a mom. She was a college student. She loved painting. She loved to read. I do not want more people to understand that she wasn't just some horrible person running away from the police, because that's not what she was at all. I remember this Michael Simpson here. No, Michael Simpson was involved in some other stuff. And I don't have his racket right now. But he was involved in some more stuff, I think, involving a different case. This man here is very dangerous. It goes on to say that David Perry, a 64-year-old prosecutor, was newly named acting district attorney for Brunswick Judicial Circuit, including Glenn County, when he met with GBI agents and Glenn Police Chief Matt Doring to watch the dash cam video for the first time. You see, these agencies work together when they know that they want to cover up a case. And then they'll try to call it interfering when the public starts to get the reaction of, hey, man, what's going on? Perry told the investigators prior to viewing the 31-minute tape that he was pro-law enforcement and skeptical that the officers in Small shooting had done anything wrong, McDaniel said. As he watched the video, however, Perry's demeanor changed, McDaniel said. Officer Sacer's dash cam video shows Small backing up into the utility pole, then pulling forward and bumping into his county vehicle. At roughly the same time, Georgia State Patrol Trooper Jonathan Malone is seen running behind Small's vehicle in an effort to extract her from driver's side, but he retreats when he sees Glenn County officers with their guns pointed at the Buick. Okay? So in other words, you have the state trooper trying to say, hey, you know, pull your car out of gear, let me stop for you so I can pin you down, get you out of the car. Then you have the Glenn County Police. Every time they show up, most of the time, I'm going to say most because there's not every police officer is not bad. But every time a lot of these race soldiers or police officers who just really want to shoot somebody, every time they show up, they always want to grab their guns out. You know, they always want to pull their guns out. So the state trooper was saying, hey, man, let me try to see if I can get her to, you know, to go into the ditch or the area, which will stop the car. We can then get her out of the car because she's driving erratic, probably under influence of alcohol or whatnot. We can do it this way. But here come the Glenn County Police. They basically got their guns already drawn. Goes on to say here that let me get out there and get her. Okay, Malone calls out the other officers according to GBI audio transcript. Hold on, one unarmed officer responds. If she moves the car, I'm going to shoot her, Simpson says. I told y'all about the Simpson. Something is very, very, very strange about this Simpson dude and this other guy. What's his name? I forget his other name, the other guy. But I think they were both involved in some more stuff. I forget. I could be wrong. I have to go back and look at the notes and look at the articles. Moments later, gunfire erupts and Small is hit by police bullets. After the shooting, Sasser and Simpson are heard on video discussing the shooting. Okay? Sasser and Simpson. "Where did you hit her?" Simpson asked. According to the GBI transcript, "I hit her right in the face," Sasser says. See, that basically is a this district attorney basically cut them a deal when he admitted on the transcript, which was supposed to be turned over to the Georgia Bureau of Investigation, of shooting this woman in the face. He's supposed to have been charged immediately with attempted murder. He goes on to say, "I watched the bridge of her nose. I pulled the trigger and watched it hit her at the same time I think I fired," Simpson said. "Sheer Smalls was dead," Simpson waved off the witness and a former EMT who offered to render aid, leaving her slumped against the window's bleeding record show. See what I'm saying? He basically knew that there was an EMT that could revive her possibly. He said, "No." And a witness was standing, no, y'all leave, because we're going to try to cover up the case. You understand? So the idea was is that when a district attorney is charged in a case, you can use the mitigating factors at any time to, number one, as Mike Carr has done, and that is to use the violation of the oath of office law against the person, or you can get them to disbar them for mitigating factors. You understand? So when the victim is white, and I'm not saying that this happened in this case, but they would have wanted it to happen. But most of the time, this is what happens. You basically says, "Hey, you know, y'all shot a white person. Look, this you're gonna basically pay for it." Okay? But in a sense, then, you look at Jackie Johnson. Jackie Johnson said, "Well, y'all better hurry up and strike a deal with the local, with us before it get over there to the Georgia Bureau of Investigation," in which, you know, their little investigation, when it's from the officers, most of the time they're cleared. But in her case, I think it would have been a civil rights violation had the Georgia the Georgia Bureau of Investigation got involved and investigate more. But because, and the reason why I say that about this Thompson dude is because he was on the transcript saying things that made it really evidence that he admitted where he shot this girl in the face and should have not done so. The state trooper was trying to say, "Okay, we can go and get, you know, and try to stop her her car. Okay, let's find ways to do that." And they can do this when they want to. You know, you can put out, you know, tracks on the road that will flatten her tires. They can make her or him or whoever get inside their car. They, you know, they can go into the ditch and stop the car. They have a lot of ways of this escalating issues, but they choose not to do it because of when they get into this, they get that badge and that gun and have that narcissistic personality, they go, wow. They go, wow. So I wanted to talk about that a little bit, you know, and I know her, you know, I think it was her ex-boyfriend or ex-husband, I'm sorry, or father or whatever, said that nobody was held responsible for that. But Jackie Johnson, this is one of the reasons why she's really getting indicted. You know, I want to make that very clear. It also goes on to say that another district attorney in Georgia was trying to influence a manslaughter trial with $1,000 bribes to officers after he was already facing criminal damage charges over campaign rap videos of a car doing donuts in a parking lot. Muskogee County District Attorney Mark Jones, 40. Then the community wants the same district attorney in Brunswick, Jackie Johnson, the community leaders said that they want a probe sought into ex-Brunswick DA's conduct in Ken Atkins' case following indictment. You see, this woman, man, has been getting away with covering up a lot of cases. And inside these offices where these white supremacists are working, they always going to have their fall guy. Always going to have the fall guy. It is very important for you to have the fall guy. You understand? Or the what Millie Fuller calls the white sacrifice. Okay? So they were just waiting on one case. One case that was going to do the whole thing, man, and finally get somebody for this. If you think that we're going to charge three white men for it, you got another thought coming. We'll go after a white woman before we'll go after a white man. You understand? This is what they were trying. This is what they were saying. And so when you get off code, now, here's the thing. While I don't think that the state trooper should have been charged, the two Glynn County police officers should have been charged with murder because they admitted on the tape that they did it. And when the Georgia Bureau of Investigation lied and says that the police interfered with their case, no, the state can bring charges with it at any time. And anybody who gets involved in the investigation, even if it's a police officer, could be charged with obstruction of justice and interfering and tampering with evidence. They know that. So now this retired Georgia Bureau of Investigation agent is trying to say, you know, the police in Glenwood, they interfere. You are the state police. You can put the city chief in jail for interfering with your investigation if you wanted to. No, you are just off code now because you have the public trying to now see what happened into Carolina White's case. Carolina White case. So they can bring charges on anybody they want. After the police have their investigation, there can be additional charges on state level. Doesn't matter if you cut some deal with some local district attorney. Bring charges when you want to as a state police officer. In addition to that, this retired Georgia Bureau of Investigation agent later admitted that he should have did more and that he let the woman down, what we said earlier. So that now that Jackie Johnson has been charged in Ahmaud Arbery's case, they knew that they were going to look at other cases. They knew that they were going to look at other cases, and they were going to find one or two more cases involving this woman where she done covered up evidence, and then people in her office, they done fabricating, hiding out evidence, tampering with evidence, and you know, basically making sure that evidence do not get displayed to the public or to the prosecution or whoever. Like I told you, picking and choosing to charge a district attorney or any public officials for misconduct. When we live in a white supremacist system, you know, out of all the times that they have been doing this to black folks, prosecutors been getting away with a lot of crimes here. They've been getting away with violating their oath of office. Why is it that Mike Carr, the attorney general here, is the only one that really does this? Is now doing this. But if you really look at it, the state attorney general really has not done a lot to these police officers. I don't even know why they be getting elected, because they stay in their office and do nothing, really. They try to go out there some people who basically don't wear no badges and guns. Oh, you're going to be indicted for embezzlement and blah, blah, blah this and blah, blah, blah that. But what about that police officer who's out there killing people for their organs? We don't care about that. You know, that's what they're about. The same thing with the news media, because they're all on code. That's the reason why you got to get some real down-to-earth people in there who look at you and say, I don't care who you are. If you break, if you break the law, we're going to go after you. And in this particular case, you will see in other cases that the district attorneys pick and they choose who to go after. When they went after Mike Nifong and told him that we're going to disbar you and we're going to have your trial open to the public, we're going to make sure to choose to not never is able to do this to anybody else again, that is why. And we're going to basically disbar you so you can never be a prosecutor again. When that happened to him in 2007, I think, 2006 or 7, when this happened, you're like, damn, a prosecutor can have a public trial and everybody see that he's getting humiliated by all of these folks? Why did that not happen, in the case involving Mike Jones, Janola Wilson, all the other black people who have been shot and killed for misconduct by prosecutors, by the police, and they never did anything, had no public trial. But, of course, there will be articles in the Duke LaCrosse situation is that DePaul University and everybody else trying to basically write these reviews and just shove it in our faces that just because three white men had gotten off on the accusation of rape does not mean that other white men do not engage in rape. That's what they tried to push into our faces, which, as we know, is not true. Understand? The article goes on to say that the Duke LaCrosse case and false, or what they call false race, rape allegations. Let's pick it up from a blog. I mean, like a one of the paragraphs here. It says that to prove that it is the authors have to demonstrate that false rape allegations and prosecutors' reliance upon them represent a serious problem in the U.S. today. They cite several pages of evidence reporting that false rape claims are up in the neighborhood of 50%. Can these statistics be correct? Huh. So you all in the colleges and universities as professors, y'all want to do your little studies when a white man is accused, or white men are accused of rape, and talk about feminist then. It goes on the right here that false, there must be evidence that sexual assault never actually happened, which would usually only be seen after thorough investigation has been conducted. And reporting sexual assault to the FBI in the Uniform Crime Reports, or UCR program, police departments are allowed to list rape reports as unfounded, which means either that they are false, they did not happen, or baseless. Something happened, but it did not meet the elements of sexual assault offense. It does not include reports that are unsubstantiated. In fact, there is no unique category in the UCR program for these cases. They should technically be left open by the police departments and never close using UCR criteria. This is certainly complicated, but it's only get worse. Because baseless reports make up a sizable percentage of those that are deemed unfounded, the article writes. See, they want to basically express now that these three white men got raped, that, you know, false rapes is up 50%, you know. So we cannot trust women. Wait a minute, what did the female say? What did she do? Or was she doing certain types of things there that made it to be rape? You understand? But it goes on to say, because baseless reports make up a sizable percentage. In other words, because now you're accusing a white person, then we have to make sure that we understand that when these women talk about false rapes, we got to look at both sides of the story. Yes, we do. It goes on the right here, though, that because Facebook reports make up a sizable percentage of those that are deemed unfounded, this means that the term cannot be used interchangeably with the notion of false reports. In other words, people often use the term unfounded to mean false, but this is technically an error because unfounded reports in the UCR program include both those that are false as well as those that are baseless. The distinction is understandably difficult to grasp, so it's not surprising that this confusion has crept into discussion of false rape reporting, little helped by the lack of clear criteria in the UCR definition. In other words, now that the Duke lacrosse players have been accused of rape by a black female, we're going to have to start understanding what false allegations are. Okay, especially when it is three white men. And I'm not saying that they are guilty. You know, they basically was, you know, relieved by a jury or found not guilty by a jury. But what happened if she didn't understand or couldn't identify the actual men who actually penetrated her? And basically, even though that she probably couldn't remember who raped her at the party, you know, then the prosecutors is able to say, okay, well, you can't describe your victim. I mean, you're the suspect here. So that means you're lying. Okay? But if you got all of these people around you and they basically taking turns doing whatever, you're having trouble identifying because you're worrying about what's going on as far as a struggle and you've been caught up in the stakes. That's what they're not understanding. And so therefore, while these three may have gotten off, that doesn't mean that rapes don't happen at colleges and universities, at the frat parties, and other places, you see. It goes on to say here that with these distinctions in mind, let's look at how they translate into real-life situations. What are examples of false rape reports? The clearest is the woman who cried rape to the 911 operator to get the police officers to come more quickly during a domestic altercation and who really admitted it was is when the police arrived. Another example would be the case in which police later determined that the alleged victim herself wrote a note attributed to the suspect or who herself purchased materials purportedly used in a sexual assault. Now look, if, like I said again, you can be confused, you can be given some type of alcohol, you can be given something to alter your mind so that you cannot remember. So it's not then that the woman was wrong, in my opinion. It was that she basically was dazed and she could not really remember. That's the only reason why they got off. You understand? And people might argue against that. Okay? But don't make it seem as if this doesn't happen at football games and parties, frat parties and parties that these football players have at Duke and any other school. You understand? Because, again, you see this happen in these colleges and universities parties all the time, as I said. And the school sometimes, most of the time, would try to rub it off, try to go behind closed doors and settle with the victims, try to find a way to expel the student, try to say, oh, no, you lying, blah, 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 this. Hey, now we have universities, when this came out and it was a major situation back in 2007, you had DePaul University College of Law and all these other colleges and universities, all of a sudden they were interested in doing a report and a review on the statistics of so-called false rape. Well, I won't say so-called because there are false rape accusations out there that's been proven. But they all of a sudden, after the Duke lacrosse players want to do the statistics, they want to do the report, they want to have some data, they want to show you that this is going on, you see. Okay. It goes on to say a few research projects have attempted to determine the percentage of false reports. That is, researchers attempt to determine the number of cases in which the evidence definitely proves that the accusations is false. The Portland, Oregon Police Department examined 431 complaints of complete or attempted sexual assaults in 1990 and found that 1.6% were determined to be false, in comparison to a rate of 2.6 of false reports for stolen vehicles. The San Diego Police Department Sex Crime Division routinely evaluate the rates of false reports over several years and found them to be around 4%. In a recent study of 2,643 sexual assault cases reported to British police, 8% was classified as false allegations. Yet when researchers applied the actual criteria for a false report, as opposed to an unsubstantiated or unfounded report, the figure dropped of 2%. Family, when they accused Bill Cosby of this, did they do the study then? Out there now talking about R. Kelly transported grown women or underage women, where in most of the states, the age of consent with this adult, you know, they were all of age. And this is, certain women are coming out to tell, say this, okay, not just me. A lot of these women who are accused of R. Kelly, even though they claimed that they were, you know, underage, they consented. Most of, you know, Lisa Van Allen, of course, consented when she was at the age of 17. Which means then that there was no law broken. That's the reason there why they didn't charge Bishop any long with these boys' cases. No law broken. Because they didn't report that they were raped by the man. You understand? They didn't report that. No police report. It was only later until it's time, hey, I want some money, that you then start to say, hey, a crime has been committed. You understand? But I wanted to talk about Mike Nightfall because he got disbarred, even though that they didn't basically brought on charges of what they call public official misconduct. I guess they probably tried to. But this was to say, hey, I'm warning you, stay on code. And the testament of all of these white prosecutors who think that they're going to basically go after a white person and there's no real commitment to other people that's in the white system that says, hey, okay, wait a minute. Okay, we'll go, he's going to become a white sacrifice. That's what Millie Fuller taught us. Okay, people say, oh, well, you're racist for bringing up racism. I don't see how. You understand? And so therefore, I still believe that these players was forced upon her. And like I said, that she was given alcohol as something that will alter her brain, because that happens. You can look at other situations where women are raped and they cannot remember because they've been given some type of drug or date rape drug and all this stuff. You understand? So they wouldn't remember. They will feel like, hey, my body has been, violated. Okay, so I understand that. Now, here's the thing here. When you start going, and I'm almost done, when you start going after the district attorneys, when you start to remove the judges who should be sued for their inappropriate way of interpreting the law, when you remove them for office, I don't see why federal judges get life appointments anyway, because they're the reason why white supremacy is very destructive, because they can only be removed from office by what they call bad behavior. That needs to change, because federal judges basically have this broad power that when they do something wrong, or they basically don't call the law for what it is, that's them officially engaging in public misconduct. Understand? And so therefore, when you go after the district attorneys, when you went after the police, you go after the district attorneys, and you go to the judges. And once you do that, then I can say that we are moving towards the system of racism and placing it with the system of justice. If there's not nothing else, we'll stand adjourned.
Streets, and what Miss Benjamin messed up on was high time. What do you think about? I want to say that funeral homes was involved, and there was a chop shop that we believe that Beverly Watkins or the state trooper paid off so that they could make sure that they can get the information here. Investigator Dean Henderson says that he cannot explain specifics because he's still investigating along with other people so they can gather evidence to hand over to the state police. We don't have information that we can share with the public right now because we don't want to hurt the investigation. But what we will say is that Deputy Watkins, we believe, hired a chop shop, a funeral home, and got a medical examiner to take Tarasha, kill her for her organs. And right now, we believe there's an agent that used to work for him, but we're not sure, so we won't say his name at this point.
private detectives have also worked into the mitigating of the situation. Henderson said that when he talked to Agent Sean Smith, he said he was blown off. I talked to Agent Smith, and he was kind of like a weird guy to me. I didn't trust him. Henderson said he wants an Alabama different. I wanted her mom to tell the state attorney general to hire a special prosecutor to go after her accomplices. The number one accomplice I wanted to go after is Chris Dukes. He was the last person to see her alive. Chris Dukes was the last person to see her alive. And I trust he basically should be in jail right now for kidnapping. And the reason why he should be in jail is because what he did in her case, I mean, what he did for the police, is that he took her down to Sardis. And we have pictures that we want him to show so that we can move the investigation forward. He said that William Raleigh dropped the ball on this, and we believe there's a lot of police officers engaged in this type of hustle where they're killing people for their organs. And we're trying to get down to the bottom of it. Investigative journalist Lee Henderson worked all day and night, and he was able to find evidence of foul play. Film producer Lee Henderson.
While leading the oath for office, creating milestones so Deputy Walters can leave, anticipate his friends in his orchard harvesting campaign, the strike for residents, and Tory Millick was able to help him get away with this lie. And lose the front.
Thank you.